You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in Andorra, Arcalis.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney, the Lion of the Chilterns.
Hello, Richard.
Lionel, straight into it. Tail of the Etap, please.
Tail of the Etap. Well, stage 9 from Vieja Val d'Aran to Andorra Arcalis, 184.5 kilometres, 4 climbs before the ore category climb to Arcalis in Andorra. The big news is that Alberto Contador is out of the tour. He withdrew on the road, waved goodbye as he got into the Tinkoff team car. It was a cracking stage, wasn't it? Both the race for the stage win and the race for the overall positions. Tom Dumoulin won his first Tour de France stage win, adding it to stage win at the Vuelta and the Giro. The Dutchman was the star of the first week of the Giro, wasn't he? And he was in the break. He got dropped from the break at one point, but he didn't panic. He got back on and then attacked with 12 kilometres to go. On the penultimate climb, the narrow, steep Col de Bexalis, Thomas de Gendt was away on his own, but his legs locked up and he got caught by that group behind. George Bennett of Team Lotto NL Jumbo launched several attacks without managing to get away. Then Danny Navarro and Rafał Majka formed a dangerous-looking alliance before Dumoulin finally got up the road. And he looked really good on the final climb, even when the rain turned to hailstones the size of marbles. At one point, Rui Costa was chasing on his own. Thibaut Pinot had been chasing. Rafał Majka and Costa were chasing, but the Dutchman was strong enough to win by 38 seconds. Behind that race, the GC favourites really had a pop at each other, didn't they? It was pretty chaotic, lots of attacks going on, but then riders would go up the road and then slip back and then get dropped. It was, you know, it was all happening really. And I suppose the most significant move was when Sergio Henao of Sky accelerated. That provoked Dan Martin to attack. Richie Port kept accelerating, which put his own teammate, BMC teammate TJ Van Garderen, in trouble. At the finish, Adam Yates led Chris Froome and Nairo Quintana over the line, with Port and Martin a couple of seconds back. Everybody else lost a bit of time. So Froome is in yellow, still by 16 seconds from Yates. There's been a slight shuffle behind. Rodriguez has slipped a few places. Dan Martin's up to third. Valverde's fallen to 10th. Aru and Van Garderen are out of the top 10. Thibaut Pinot is the new wearer of the polka dot jersey ahead of Majka. Adam Yates is still best young rider in white. And tomorrow it's the rest day in Andorra.
And I should have said, where are we, Lionel?
We are on the mountain in Andorra. It's beautiful. I've never been here before, because in 2009, when the race came here, I actually went to a friend's wedding near to Béziers, further along the south coast of France. Missed out on that stage. I'm trying to remember, it was Brice Fayou who won that day, wasn't it, 2009? The only other time they've been here was 1997, when Jan Ullrich really stamped his authority on the tour that year. It's a funny old climb. The one before it, though, was a real stinger,
brute,
wasn't it?
An absolute brute. And we're surrounded here by people wearing bin liners and other sort of temporary waterproof and windproof clothing, because the temperature, as Chris Froome said, it went from very, very hot, they were pouring water all over themselves on the penultimate climb, to 10 degrees. It was 35 degrees to 10 degrees in the space of about half an hour. And those hailstones were falling very hard. I came out of the press tent, because we were positioned 4.5 kilometres from the summit. We had a great vantage point for the race. I came out of the press tent to watch it. I got a serious injury with these hailstones. I mean, they were properly heavily, they were marbles, as you said. Now, obviously, the stage was interesting. The stage win was fantastic by Tom Dumoulin. We'll hear a little bit from Tom Dumoulin from an interview we did during the Giro, actually, but it's more general interview about Dumoulin and you know, what he's aiming at this year. That was fantastic. But behind him, the battle between the overall riders was really interesting, because it was an odd one. Riders didn't seem to be very good at judging their efforts. And I'm not sure whether that was something to do with the weather, with the conditions, but we saw riders like Dan Martin attacking a lot. Bauke Mollema was quite impressive as well. And then they'd get dropped, you know, and that's odd to see that, the riders risking getting dropped. We were talking yesterday about how conservative tactics can be in the mountains, because riders are so riding so defensively. And the rider who rode most defensively today was not Chris Froome, it was Nairo Quintana. And Froome was asked at the finish why, you know, did he not expect Quintana to attack? He said, yes, he did. But It just confirms to me that for Quintana, it's all about the final week. He's riding at the moment as though he's in the yellow jersey.
Yeah, he is. I mean, what Froome said was interesting because Froome said he was bracing himself for that one big Quintana attack. And, of course, it never came. Rich, you made a very good point when we were watching the stage.
What?
Because Movistar had two riders sent up the road, didn't they, in that break? It was Winner Anacona and Jesus Herrada. And they're both very good climbers. They weren't out there hunting for a stage win. They were there to be, presumably, bridges for Quintana or assistance for Quintana, you know, should it play out the correct way on the final climb. But, of course, the break got so far up the road, it was still sort of 8-9 minutes
at
the bottom.
That tactic of placing riders, you know, in a break, and it worked fantastically well with Winner Anacona last year on Alpe d'Huez. When Quintana attacked and bridged up to him, he was able to give him an awful lot of help, you know. And
but it's no good if the break's 8 minutes up the road.
And most famously, I think we saw it in 2011 when Andy Schleck won that stage and had two men up the road, and Maxime Monfort was a huge help to him, basically towing him to the bottom of the Col du Galibier, at which point Andy Schleck took off. And that was a great tactic, and it was quite new back then. It's been used a lot since then. It's a great tactic, but not if the break is so far up the road that the possibility of bridging is and they stayed away. You know, they never caught the guys. But what's interesting about it, and Valverde was in it initially too. He dropped back because it wasn't going anywhere with Valverde in it. But what's interesting is the fact they placed those guys in that move does suggest that they weren't there, as you say, for the stage win. It does suggest that they were thinking too that Quintana would at some point attack.
He's obviously waiting for a good opportunity rather than any opportunity, and perhaps that's because he thinks there's going to be plenty of chances in the final week. But that is a dangerous game to play, because now one of the summit finishes has been chalked off and he's made no gains. But Rich, as you said yesterday in the podcast, if Quintana had been offered the choice of getting to this point in the race, pretty much level pegging with Chris Froome at the moment, really. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, the gap is very small. He would have been delighted with that. He would have definitely taken that. So probably playing out exactly as they would hoped, and maybe they felt, well, we'll try this, and if something comes of it where Quintana can make a move on the final climb, we'll do it. If not, nothing's lost.
Look who it is, Lionel. Look who it is. I was going to say, just did you see the Brian Holm quote this morning? We'll introduce our guest in a moment. He's here waiting in the wings. Brian Holm came out with a great quote this morning. He said that the Quintana, when he didn't follow Froome on the descent of the Perisord, he said that was the stupidest thing he'd ever seen. And he hoped that Quintana's director sportif battered him with an old bicycle pump. It's a bit strong. Ciro Scogna Emilio.
Listeners, so happy to be here. After a stage, a final of the stage, I was there in the finish line, and I had a big question mark in my mind, the famous question, what I'm doing here? And no answer.
You weren't the only one today, Ciro, because it was absolutely freezing up there, cold, wet. It must be miserable. A man like you, a man who's as suntanned, sun-kissed as you are.
Maybe one of the worst stages that I could ever even imagine for me. I was thinking also about the word nightmare in English, no? Nightmare. And I know this word in a lot of other languages. In Italian, it is incubo. In Spanish, pesadilla. In Portuguese, pesadelo. In French, cauchemar. I had the time to think about all this stuff, because you can imagine, dear Richard, for me the race was, I mean, not...
This is like coffee break, French, Italian, Portuguese, English. Ciro, you were up there for a reason, though. Who did you speak to?
Most obviously with my two men, Vincenzo Nibali and Fabio Aru. I mean, in this stage, Fabio Aru lost 1 minute from Chris Froome and Nairo Quintana, but I have to say that it was helped by Vincenzo Nibali on the final climb. He told me, Fabio, that he hadn't a good day and he suffered on the last climb, but thanks to Vincenzo Nibali, he was able, I mean, to have a gap about only 1 minute.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring us with Rafa at the Tour de France. Eurosport sponsor our Pedaleur de Charme Award. Lots of nominations today for Andre Greipel for helping give out bidons and stuff. But Andre Greipel won a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt last year, and I mean, that doesn't disqualify him automatically, but, you know, he didn't. He wasn't a very gracious recipient, was he? He didn't look too happy.
No, last year he got it for not shutting the door on Mark Cavendish in the sprint,
yeah,
didn't
right,
he?
Yeah.
I think Andre Greipel, yes, he's a sprinter, a leader on the flat stages, but on a stage like this, getting bottles is basically one of his jobs. I mean, I don't
he was giving them to other. He was handing them to Luke Rowe.
Oh, apparently. Okay.
So he was handing them from the Team Sky to Luke Rowe.
Right. Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
Fine, that'll do. Mm. But actually, somebody else, Craig Akers, has nominated another rider, and it's actually the rider that Chiro wanted to nominate as well.
Yes, exactly. In my opinion, Jardison Pantano, the Colombian guy, because he arrived at the finish line with an umbrella. With an umbrella, I mean, there are also some nice images on the website. Because, listener, I was thinking about, yes, umbrella. I mean, this... Today we need umbrella, but listeners, I don't want to use umbrella. I want to use sunbeds, sunglasses, not umbrella. So for this reason I have this question. I mean, we come back to the first and main question, what I'm doing here. But listeners, Richard, Lionel, I have faith in this. I mean, in 2 weeks tour will be finished, and in 3 weeks my holidays will start. So this is my son, listeners, my idea.
What's funny about it, we've got a picture of Pantano in front of us here holding an umbrella. What's curious about it, he's with Matt Heyman by the looks of things, and what's curious about it is he's got a very serious expression on his face, like it was perfectly normal.
He's not sharing the umbrella with anyone either, is he? He's hogging the umbrella for himself.
He's definitely Pedal de Charme for that.
Okay.
Well done.
So he's better than me because he had an umbrella. I didn't have an umbrella.
Maybe he's looking for you, Chiro. Maybe he's looking for you.
Well, our friend and colleague Simon Gill, photographer, went up to the up the climb a couple of kilometres up from here and got caught in the rain and hailstones, and said that people were ducking for cover wherever they could find it, in camper vans, under small umbrellas, large umbrellas, under the trees. It was I remember a stage of last year's tour in the Alps when very heavy rain fell on us, but I think today was worse. I haven't seen weather as bad as that at the tour for a long time.
A few years ago when Sylvain Chavanel won the stage. Let's talk briefly about the butterfly of Maastricht, Tom Dumoulin, because we're going to hear a little bit from him. He was a superb winner of the stage. A lot of people think he's a future Grand Tour winner. You know, today I thought he rode brilliantly because he's a big lad. He struggled a bit on that really steep penultimate climb, but he just dropped off a little bit and came back at his own pace, and he didn't panic. And I thought there was quite an interesting contrast there with two of our French riders, Warren Barguil and Thibaut Pinot. Thibaut Pinot on the attack again all day, and obviously riding well. Daniel suggested last night in the Free Boss file that the problem was a physical one rather than a mental one. But today, he seemed he would follow attacks and then just give up and then follow another attack. And I think he's battling his demons a lot of the time, but also the massive expectation that is around him. Warren Barguil got dropped as well on that steep climb and made a sign to the TV cameras that it was all over for him. Then he came back, and I thought, Warren, just stick at it, mate. It's, you know, and then Barguil, Dumoulin, his Giant Alpecin teammate, showed great sort of persistence and calm when he was dropped, and he didn't panic, and he came back, and he went.
Yeah, it's interesting. The immediate reaction when a rider loses contact is that they must be in difficulty, and obviously they are to a degree because they don't want to follow the pace that's being set. But they, in Dumoulin's case, may well have been calculating and thinking, if I go into the red here where it's really steep, I could ruin my chances. Whereas when it levels out, his power could be an advantage.
And this is a climb that would suit a rider like him. It is a ruler type of climb. We saw Jan Ulrich win in 97.
Yes, really a good performance. I mean, we remember that he was obliged to leave the Giro after really a good first week. And now he's in the Tour also to prepare the Olympics. And in my opinion, it could be a good bet for the Olympic time trial in Rio, if I'm not wrong, this 10th of August.
Well, let's hear from Dumoulin. I spoke to him at the Giro, so we'll hear. We've not played this interview. We thought we would play it tonight. It's just a couple of minutes. Quite an interesting bit about his background. So here's Tom Dumoulin. You mentioned that the other day, you know, you've always got a keen understanding of the sport and the significance of the pink jersey and so on, but you mentioned that you came to cycling quite late, and I understand you're not from a family that's involved in cycling or anything. Is your father head of fertility at the University Hospital, is that correct?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So how do they, how have they reacted to your success? How have they been supportive of your career as well?
They react quite down to earth like I am also. They're not jumping around or they don't also don't want to be in interviews or whatever. They just this is my thing and my job, and they really like it. And they came to watch, of course, when it was in the Netherlands, and it was really special. But they're always a bit on the background and just supportive and nice.
They're fully 100% behind you now then in terms of yeah. watching how your career develops.
Yeah, definitely. We had some discussions when I switched studying for full-time cycling, but now I convinced them.
A few people were struggling to understand why the Olympics would be such a priority for you, but am I right in thinking that the Olympic Games in Holland mean, you know, Olympic gold medal would mean as much as a win in the Tour de France or something?
I guess so, yeah. And to me, it's a matter of looking at opportunities and chances, and I think my chances on Olympic gold are much higher than winning the Tour de France right now. So I wouldn't know why to go for 8th place in a GC when I can have the chance of getting Olympic gold or at least a medal.
I read some remarks at the Vuelta that you were quite inspired by Bradley Wiggins. You're a similar sort of build, you're tall, you're actually about the same weight as him. Is somebody like that and his success at the Tour, does that encourage you to think that it might be something that's possible for you in the future?
Yeah, definitely. He showed a few years ago that it is really possible to become from actually a track rider, which I'm not, of course, but at least a big tall rider who can push a lot of watts. Yeah, to become skinnier and to still produce a lot of power and then to win some big stage races like the Tour de France. So yeah, that of course is an inspiration.
So we heard there from Tom Dumoulin, and what's that noise?
Hello chaps, where are we, Lionel? Well, tonight, Lionel, I am in Arcalis, the ski resort where the stage finished. Very wet Arcalis, not as wet as it was about 2 hours ago when the stage finished, and we were bombarded by golf ball size hailstones. The stage itself, interesting game of chess really between the general classification contenders. Lots of thrust and counter thrust in the closing kilometres, lots of attacks. None from Nairo Quintana, which was interesting, I'll come on to in a minute. Dan Martin is impressing me more and more, and you know, I was at the Dauphiné Libre, we're not supposed to call it that, but who cares. The Dauphiné in June, and Dan was climbing extremely well there, and he has continued that at the Tour de France and may even be climbing better than he was at the Dauphiné. And I think he's growing in confidence, growing his stature with every mountain stage, with every difficult race that he's doing at the moment. He moved to Andorra a few months ago, so he was on home roads today. He lives just down at the bottom of the valley, and I think a few kilometres from there anyway. He is doing a lot more climbing and training. He's moved teams, obviously. He's at Essex Quickstep now, having been at what is now known as Cannondale Drapac for several years. And the new environment that he's found at Essex Quickstep really seems to be benefiting him. And he seems full of confidence, and he seems incredibly relaxed as well. And that's not something you could always say about Dan Martin in the past. I think he's very comfortable in his own skin at the moment, and I really see shades of what Kruiswijk did at the Giro in Dan Martin's performances at the moment, and well, particularly his Tour de France. So can he win the Tour? Who knows? I mean, two time trials, one of which will suit him okay. I mean, he hasn't got great pedigree in time trials. I'm not sure he'll be able to dislodge Chris Froome, but certainly the third place on the podium, if we presume that Quintana is going to be Froome's closest rival, is up for grabs. So very impressed with him. Quintana himself, a bit of criticism today, or a bit of bemusement really, about why Movistar didn't attack more, or why Quintana didn't attack on the final climb. I actually think they're doing exactly the right thing, but I thought that last year there was a big clamour for them to attack in the Pyrenees last year, and they didn't, and they left it, and they eventually ran out of road in the Alps. But I simply don't think that Nairo Quintana has it in his armoury to launch big attacks in the first week or the end of the first week of a Grand Tour that are really going to cause an awful lot of damage to Team Sky and the other general classification contenders. I think for Quintana to win the Tour, it has to be a war of attrition, a winding down process, and I think that they are doing okay at the moment tactically. So that's my thoughts on the day, guys. Rest day tomorrow. Who knows, maybe we'll catch up. Maybe you'll be able to give me my new clothes and my contact lenses. Let's hope so. Cheers, guys.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much again to Rafa for sponsoring us at the Tour de France. Still sporting my Rafa gear here. I think you're getting the Rafa kit out tomorrow, aren't you, Lionel?
Yeah, rest I'm going to try it all on the rest day.
Saving it all for the first rest day. Chiro?
Yes, rest day for who, dear listeners? Because certainly maybe for riders, but not for me. Because, for example, also tomorrow I'm obliged to ride for newspapers.
The rest days are the hardest days, aren't they, for us? But, you know, we don't feel sorry for ourselves or anything. At least we're in Andorra. Are you off, Chiro? Are you off?
Listeners, thanks. And if you want, write on Twitter if you are able to answer to my question, what I'm doing here.
Well, Chiro, have you had anyone take up your offer of anyone coming out to Naples in early August to take up your offer of a free pizza?
Not for the moment. I mean, I read about the listeners. He told me that he was in Tuscany, but I'm not in Tuscany, unfortunately, in this month of August. So, listeners, it's clear. First 5 days of August in Naples. I wait for you.
Great, and Mark Alirizar has also offered listeners, friends of the podcast, free coffee or discounted coffee in his cafe in the Basque Country. Let's return briefly, Lionel, to Chris Froome and the issue, the wider issue of safety and security in the race, because there've been a couple of incidents of spectator hit today by George Bennett.
Yeah,
and I don't know what happened to him, but it looked quite nasty.
Well, first of all, Chris Froome was fined 200 Swiss francs for lashing out at a spectator yesterday. That's around about 180 euros, so roughly about £200 at the moment. I haven't checked the exchange rate.
£800, isn't it?
Haven't checked the exchange rate, but getting more expensive the longer Sky leave it to pay that one. So, it's a standard fine, isn't it? For I suppose the equivalent would be bringing the sport into disrepute. There was a bit of a debate about it, wasn't there, about whether it was right or wrong. Obviously, you know, lashing out at somebody is not really right. But Chris Froome did make the point on Twitter that the guy was holding a flag and it was getting very close to his handlebars and front wheel. These incidents with spectators running alongside riders, they are an accident waiting to happen. And today, particularly where there was a wide corner where sort of a dozen or 15 or 20 people were all sort of running alongside, and it does place the riders in jeopardy. There was also an incident, a near miss really, with I think it was Rafał Majka and the guy in the head-to-toe green body stocking.
Yeah, that was close.
I mean, it's a great day out. The tour is fantastic. People are here on their holidays. They want to embrace and enjoy it to the full. And I have no issue with somebody dressing head to toe in a green body stocking, but I do have an issue with them stepping into the road in front of the riders. And we see it every year, and it's not that it's getting worse, but today we did see an incident, a man facing the wrong way on a corner, and George Bennett ploughed into him and knocked him straight over. And he was knocked. That would have been a heck of a shot, because George Bennett would have been shifting at that point, probably 20 kilometres an hour.
I'm not sure he wasn't to blame in the same way that guys who run alongside.
No,
he
that's
just
true.
Stepped into the road, and it was very unfortunate as far as I could tell. If it was a guy that the footage wasn't close up enough to really see, and he was spread eagled on the ground, and it looked nasty. And hope he or she is okay. On the subject, though, Lionel, I spoke to Brian Cookson earlier in the tour when he was on the race on this very subject. So here is the UCI president, Brian Cookson. Brian, we're all aware of Tour de France. Cycling is a very vulnerable sort of event. Have some public roads, free to watch. Security seems to have been stepped up this year. Is that your impression as well?
Well, obviously that's the case. I think in the light of circumstances, I don't know anything too much about the detail of what the police and the local authorities in France have been doing, but obviously they're very concerned to make sure that that the public can enjoy the Tour de France in safety.
There were a couple of events last year, there were events around Team Sky, obviously, and in Paris on the final day there were a couple of security breaches. Do you think that sort of refocused minds on how much of an issue it could be?
I mean, I wouldn't want to overstate it, but I do think that, you know, everybody should bear in mind that they have a responsibility to behave responsibly and safely. And I think I see some things, not just on the tour, but in other races where spectators, the public, the fans are behaving a little bit irresponsibly. And, you know, I don't like to see people running alongside riders shouting in their ear. That's the last thing you want when you're a bike rider in trying to win a race. I don't like to see people waving their flags and just removing at the last possible moment and so on. We've all got a responsibility as fans and as people who love cycling to behave sensibly, not to put the riders in danger, not to put themselves in danger. And I think that spins over as well into more general security issues, that if people see someone acting strangely, then I think, you know, that's probably the best way in which we keep everyone safe and secure in these difficult times.
So there's a responsibility on fans to sort of police that themselves in a way, and to, you know, if they see people behaving weirdly or doing things that are inappropriate, they should... What should they do? Speak to a policeman or intervene themselves?
Well, I think I wouldn't encourage anyone to take the law into their own hands. I think there are plenty of police and stewards and marshals involved with a race like the Tour de France, and I think that's the correct route to go. But I think people need to manage their own behaviour as well. And, you know, when I see people who are obviously, let's be frank about it, obviously drunk, enjoy cycling, enjoy the sport, but don't forget, this is a huge privilege to be able to watch this sport for free at the side of the road, to get up close to the riders. Don't abuse it. That's the message. Respect the riders, respect the rest of the fans, respect yourselves.
So that was Brian Cookson just urging people not to run alongside the riders. I said the same thing last night, I think. And, you know, it's incumbent upon other spectators as well to sort of, as far as they can, as Cookson said, he wouldn't advise people or recommend that people get involved, but I think you can make your disapproval clear. Don't take the law into your own hands, but, you know, I think hopefully the wisdom of the crowd will prevail, especially in the, you know, on the mountain stages where there are lots of people. There will be on Mont Ventoux, and there will be in the Alps as well.
Yeah, because it's in nobody's interest for it to get to a point where the barriers have to be extended further and further down the mountains, because that robs the race of the sort of the seething humanity of the mountain stages, doesn't it? I mean, we do like it when the crowds close in a bit and then part at the last minute to let the bikes and the riders come through. And it's a fine line, and I suppose it's, you know, misjudgments can be made, but the running alongside the riders is just, I'm sort of always think something's going to go wrong. And
and I think most people, from what I can see, and I'm certainly of the view that Chris Froome, okay, don't punch somebody in the face, but I think he did the right thing. I think the riders have to defend themselves and protect themselves, you know, because it's dangerous, and they've worked hard to be here and to be in the shape that they're in.
Yeah, I mean, the race is about the riders. It's not about the people in fancy dress. As funny and as amusing and as kind of entertaining as that is to watch, there has to be a line, and I think that, you know, it's pretty obvious where that line is.
Now, Lionel, shifting gear, you were commenting a few minutes ago, we haven't really talked about BMC today, because Richie Port, it was a very funny tweet that you put out. Would you like to just
it was a sort of snap analysis of the situation as it was unfolding, but it did look like unusual team tactics from Richie Port of BMC Racing. Obviously, until a few days ago, he was joint leader with TJ Van Garderen, but then he lost a minute and 45 with a puncture, didn't he, very early in the race? So really, Van Garderen should be the protected man. And, you know, in teamwork terms, it was a bit like Richie Port offering to put the chamois cream in Van Garderen's bib shorts, only to use deep heat instead. It was not exactly
a very unfortunate image.
It was not exactly conventional help, was it?
He was dragging the group clear. You know, he wasn't he was in that front group and dragging it clear at points where Van Garderen was suffering pain. However, the pendulum, Daniel likes to talk about his pendulums. Pendulum is certainly swinging towards Richie Port. I mean, Richie Port is 14th now, 210 back, and Van Garderen is, I suspect, going backwards in 11th place, one minute and 1 second back. And I think that, you know, in the mountains, it's clear that Richie Porte looks better. But you did say that every day BMC have been sending out audio files of the riders' interviews after the stage, and that didn't seem to be coming through today. They have actually sent an email with their quotes just in an email, so it's all looks well.
It's all fine.
They're happy.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you watch the race and you're trying to work out what's going on here, and there's two scenarios, isn't there? One is that Van Garderen's not feeling great and has given Porte, you know, the green light to play his hand. The other is that Port's just riding off his own initiative, and it all comes out in the wash, and I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more about that on the rest day.
We had an interesting email on the subject of Chris Froome's descent of Perisord from friend of the podcast Ben Atkins, and he knows the Perisord descent very well, and one thing he says about it is it's very straight apart from a few hairpins at the top and the bottom, and it's very difficult to close gaps on because everybody's doing top speed almost all the way down. It's probably been used since 1998, but he remembers that Rodolfo Massi won from a breakaway, and Marco Pantani, in brackets, the rider, not the pot plant, that's a joke that people, long-time listeners of the podcast will get, had attacked in the climb. He was chasing Massi, and he basically said everybody stayed in the same place all the way down. So once the gap had been established, it was incredibly difficult to close it. So he just wonders whether Froome knew that descent had that particular characteristic, and that he knew that if he could get a little gap, it would be a very hard one to close down. Nicola Portal kind of said a similar thing actually last night about the difficulty on any descent of closing gaps, because the difficulty of you're not following the rider anymore and seeing the line he's taking and where he's braking, etc.
Absolutely, yeah. And once somebody has got a lead, it's very hard for a group to chase down in the same way because they can't swap turns at the front. There's still an effort being made, isn't there, going downhill, pedalling up big gear, hard and fast, going downhill, takes a toll on the legs. But it's harder for them to swap turns, share the workload. And so the lone rider at the front, it's easier in some circumstances to maintain or even grow that gap. It was a smart move. But while you're talking of listeners' emails, we had another one from Giles Makins today, and he was commenting on Alberto Contador's withdrawal from the race. He climbed into the team car, and he gave a little wave and climbed into the team car. But there was a sort of, it was quite a reluctant abandon, I think, from Contador. And Giles asks whether, if Contador got into the car, had a chat with the sports director for a couple of minutes, and then gone, do you know what, I'm going to carry on and get back out and get on his bike and carry on with the race, catch up with the group, would that be allowed? And my answer to that is yes, I think it would be allowed, as long as he covered the whole of the course.
And the car didn't move.
The car didn't move. And there's nothing in the rules to say you can't get into a vehicle, because Tom Dumoulin used a camper van for his convenience. He needed the toilet a couple
he's
of
been
days
Ill.
Ago.
I think he's been a bit ill, so yeah.
Yeah, and didn't an AG2R rider last year go into a camper van?
Oh, a rider did, but I can't remember who it was.
No, somebody might point that out. Used a camper van's conveniences in the
was
mountains.
Was it not Jean-Christophe Perrault?
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. But there's a very clear line, because who was it now last year? Sepulveda, wasn't it? Mm. He had a problem with his bike, thought that the last of his two team cars was up the road 100 metres in front of him, panicked a bit and got into the Française des Jeux team car for 100 metres to get a replacement bike. And because he got into the car and cut out 100 metres of the course, he was disqualified from the Tour. That was on the stage to Mond, wasn't it?
Yes, Mond, yeah.
So, yeah, there's a very clear rule there. If you can get into a vehicle, you could go into a cafe if you wanted and have a coffee. There's nothing to stop you. As long as you complete the whole course, you are still in the Tour de France.
But Contador did actually stay in the car and pan race, so that was a pointless discussion. But anyway, no, it was good. It's good. I enjoyed that. Anyway, listen, we should wrap things up for tonight. Got a rest day tomorrow, so we're going to take a day off podcasting. But
we've got a couple of things coming up, haven't we? We've got our 8th Friends of the Podcast special, which I've been putting together with our producer Paul Scoyins. It's called Heat, Wind and Fear. Mont Ventoux is the subject, and let's hear a little clip of that now.
Ventoux is a special one. It's a mountain which has such tragic stories around it. When you go to the top of Alpe d'Huez, you are not at the top of a mountain. When you go to the top of Ventoux, you're really at the top of the Ventoux. You're really on top of the world.
Especially as a British rider and my history, it's always had that kind of that haunting element to it as well, regards the death of Tommy Simpson and the monument, which always seems so far away. It doesn't matter how many times I do Ventoux, I'm always surprised how close he got to the top. It's always a bit disturbing. I definitely would say I got a love-hate relationship with Mont Ventoux. I've loved it quite a few times. I've hated it probably more.
Become a friend of the podcast for 2016. For £10, you'll have access to our Friends Specials, 11 in-depth episodes that will take you even further inside the sport. To sign up, visit www.thecyclingpodcast.com.
So, yeah, the Mont Ventoux stage is looming. It's on Thursday. I've made this hour-long documentary about Mont Ventoux.
Yeah, we listened to it in the car the other day, Lionel, and it's tremendous. Really great bit of work. You've been working on that all year, but we hear from lots of... Jonathan Vauthier's being asked about his then-record. It's a fascinating little exchange. It's really, really interesting. There's lots of culture in there. You've got plays, you've got music, you've got books... about all inspired by Mont Ventoux. It's really very, very interesting.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and if you want to listen to that yourself, sign up as a friend of the podcast. It's £10 and you'll be able to listen to all 8 episodes upon signing up. And we'll have, I think, 3 more between now and the end of the year, possibly a bonus. There might be a Christmas bonus, I don't know. Sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com.
We're also doing a little review of the week for members of the RAFA Cycling Club through our partnership with RAFA, so that will be available to them tomorrow, Monday, the rest day. I'm also, through the Eurosport Facebook channel, doing a Facebook Live. I mean, I'm announcing this. It just depends on the technology working and me being competent enough to do it. Never done it before. Facebook Live with Kayleigh Fretz from Velo News. The two of us will be doing we couldn't persuade Lionel to join us, but maybe next week, screwing up his face at that. Anyway, it'll probably be late afternoon, early evening, UK time, European time. So we'll put details of that on Twitter and Facebook tomorrow. That's all for tonight. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.